Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you?
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It's possible you might have first heard this song in its original form on the 1984 album Various Positions by Leonard Cohen. As I say, it's possible, but not probable. It's much more likely you heard someone else sing it first, maybe Jeff Buckley in a small East Village pub, or at the Winter Olympics being sung by Katie Lang. Or, for millions, it was the soundtrack of the animated film Shrek, a version sung by Rufus Wainwright here. The song is Hallelujah, and it has, against all odds, become one of the most widely recorded songs in music history. Alan Light, a frequent contributor to the New York Times and Rolling Stone, is author of a new book called The Holy or the Broken, Leonard Cohen, Jeff Buckley, and the Unlikely Ascent of Hallelujah. He joins me here in the Soundcheck studio. Alan, good to see you.
Hi, John.
1984 to now is, you know, there's a long stretch of time there, but it's still one song. You've built a whole book around one song.
It was an ongoing process of convincing myself that there really was enough story here to fulfill a project, to sustain a project like this. And much to my pleasure and ongoing surprise, around every corner, there turned out to be more story and more to talk about. And what started as kind of an idle thought that maybe this is interesting actually, you know, turned into a whole book here.
And it is an interesting tale, although one of the storytellers here, and you interview many people, one of the storytellers is missing, and that is Leonard Cohen himself.
Well, Leonard does very, very little in the way of interviews.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you had Sylvie Simmons on recently for her biography of Leonard that he participated in, and that
right.
was kind of his one thing that he would, you know, the one person he would talk to in recent years. So I wanted his blessing and his support, and he, through his manager, very enthusiastically gave that. But it also occurred to me that, you know, for a song with as much mythology now and as much mystique and aura around it as Hallelujah, what does he really have to gain by talking about it? I mean, if he told me, you know, I thought of that line while I was brushing my teeth, like what's he going to do that's going to add to the legacy of the song at this point?
Right. Well, and in terms of the legacy of the song, you kind of hinted it right in the title. The Holy or the Broken, Leonard Cohen, Jeff Buckley, and the Unlikely Ascent of Hallelujah. For many people, this is as much, and you write this essentially in the book, this is as much Jeff Buckley's song as it is Leonard Cohen's.
Well, it's certainly true that at this point, more people have come to this song through Jeff Buckley, either immediately through him or through all of the artists that he influenced that learned it through his version. That really is the way that the song began to really disseminate through the world. So, you know, if Leonard was the author of this song, Jeff was really the interpreter where it starts to pivot and where the song starts to take on all of this afterlife for years and years.
Now, Jeff Buckley released it on his first album and really his only
album, really.
Full-length record.
On the Grace album. And, you know, what's interesting is that legacy, the impact that Jeff has had through other artists has been so great that I think a lot of people who've come to him more recently feel like he must have been this big star
mm-hmm.
that was taken away. But the fact is, when Grace came out, Grace was a massive disappointment. There was a lot of hype and expectation around Jeff. The album, you know, peaked around number 153 on the charts or something. So, you know, we look at it now and say, oh, Jeff Buckley popularized this song. But even when he first did it, it really wasn't that popular.
Mm-hmm.
It took, you know, his death several years later and, you know, all the sort of romance and tragedy and the image that grew up around him that started to give this song an additional layer. And then it starts to snowball from there.
This is Jeff Buckley's version of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, recorded in 1994, so it's about 10 years after Leonard Cohen's original recording, from Jeff Buckley's one and only full-length record, Grace.
Well, I heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you?
goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. Well, your faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof. Her beauty and the moonlight overthrew you. And she tied you to her kitchen chair. And she broke your throne and she cut your hair. And from your lips she drew.
That, Alan Light, that is the version that I first heard. Jeff Buckley, the ill-starred singer, songwriter, his version of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, recorded in 1994. I was very lucky to have known Jeff Buckley at the very beginning of his career. One of his earliest performances was on one of my New Sounds Live concerts here in New York. So when this came out, it was, as I say, the first that I heard of it. Where did he get it from?
Well, Jeff Buckley actually did not learn the song from Leonard Cohen's performance, and actually said that when he first started performing it in you know, at Shanae and at the small clubs
small
in town
clubs
that he was playing, that he hadn't heard Leonard Cohen's version. He learned it through a version that John Cale had recorded on a Leonard Cohen tribute record. There were actually a couple of Leonard tribute records that were done early in the 90s when he had a bit of a resurgence in his career, and a lot of the sort of alt-rock world stepped up to say this was an important guy. And John Cale...
You mentioned Nirvana sort of shouting out to Leonard Cohen.
And Trent Reznor using some Leonard songs on the Natural Born Killers soundtrack. There was sort of some attention around Leonard for a minute there. And John Cale had been approached to participate. It was a French rock magazine that put together this tribute called I'm Your Fan. And
A takeoff on
I'm Your Man.
I'm Your Man.
Yes. And interestingly, even John Cale, who was a big Leonard fan and actually knew Leonard, said that he had gone to see Leonard sing at the Beacon Theater in 88 or 89, and he sang Hallelujah, and John Cale didn't know the song. You know, various positions, when Leonard recorded it, Columbia first rejected it. The label didn't put the album out. It then came out on a small independent first, and the song was not noticed. The review in Rolling Stone, which is a positive review, didn't mention the song. And it was absolutely not under the radar. It was not anywhere near the radar. So John Cale heard this song and thought, well, that's a song I like. That's a song maybe I could do. But he didn't know the words. He had only heard it that time. So he called Leonard's office and said, I want to get the words right on this. Can you send me the lyrics so that I get this, you know, do this the right way? Leonard says that he struggled with the writing of Hallelujah for several years, 2 or 3 or 4 years, depending when he's telling the story, and wrote 75, 80 verses, recorded one version of it, but then immediately started altering it as soon as he was performing it in concert. So he faxed to John Cale 15 pages of lyrics and kind of said, do what you want out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And Cale came up with a different edit than what Leonard had recorded, and it was that version that Jeff Buckley first heard, and that edit of the lyrics that he recorded on Grace, and kind of, you know, I can't say solidified the song because it continued to change, but became what, you know, what most of the world looked at as the definitive version.
But it was John Cale, former member of the Velvet Underground back in the 60s, who in 1991 did this kind of important intermediate step in making Hallelujah the hit it's become.
There was a time you let me know what's really going on below, but now you never show it to me, do you? I remember when I moved in you and the whole Hallelujah.
John Cale and his version of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah from a tribute record called I'm Your Fan, a takeoff on the Leonard Cohen song title, I'm Your Man, which came out in 1991. That's the version that Jeff Buckley heard en route to his own recording, which has become sort of the iconic version of the song, as detailed in Alan Light's new book called The Holy or the Broken, Leonard Cohen, Jeff Buckley, and the Unlikely Ascent of Hallelujah. So, Alan, we almost got your title in that verse there. It's cold or broken here. The holy or the broken is yet another verse that so many of these verses are sort of idiosyncratic to whoever's doing the song.
Well, and that's one thing that really propelled this song into a different place was, I think, because it took so long and these various different versions and manifestations to sort of get out into the world, there's an understanding that you're allowed to alter, to take what you want from the lyrics of these songs and to turn up or turn down the different elements that are in there. There's if you want it to be a more religious, a more spiritual song, you can emphasize that. If you want more the heartbreak and sorrow, you know, you work it around that way. And all of that is okay. And that's very, very different than these other sort of modern standards. Song like Imagine, you know, Yoko Ono says she gets requests every week from people who want to record Imagine. They just want to change that line, Imagine no religion.
Right.
You know, and she says, well, I can't do that. And anybody that performs Imagine exists in some relation to John Lennon's recording. It's the same. It's different. It does this or that. With Hallelujah, there's this malleability.
Because there are so many verses, all his. But as you say, some of them sort of revel in this kind of erotic imagery. Many of them pull from the biblical imagery, right. You know, David, King David composing the Psalms.
David's story, the Samson story. I mean, very literal biblical references that are in there.
Right.
You know, and Leonard Cohen always has trafficked in these, you know, tensions between the sacred and the sexual and the spiritual and the secular, and that is built into what his writing has always done. But this song, you know, those elements are there in very stark ways that enable you, you know, this is a song that's appeared on, you know, Susan Boyle's Christmas record, for better or for worse, that's been sung by, you know, punk bands, pop bands, you know, Paramore, Fall Out Boy, some of these bands that incorporated it into songs of their own. There's a lot of different pieces to pull from.
And as if, you know, taking on biblical and sexual imagery in the same song wasn't enough. I mean, after all, that goes back to the Song of Solomon. He's also writing about writing music.
About writing, right.
You know, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth. He's describing how he's writing
how,
the song.
Yeah, it's right. And, you know, with this very sort of irresistible and elemental kind of melody. I mean, I think you can get very caught up in just talking about the words, and obviously the words are very important in a Leonard Cohen song, but if it didn't have a melody that, you know, opera singers can sing or Willie Nelson can sing and get away with it, then, you know, if you don't react to that first, the song's not going to go much farther. And the basic power of the word and that idea of Hallelujah is so strong across faiths, across people, you know, without faith, but who want some sort of spiritual release. There's something about that idea that just hits everyone so universally that it opens an awful lot of doors.
And yet it didn't hit everyone universally. In fact, it was, as you say, almost universally ignored when Leonard Cohen himself recorded it back in 1984. And as you listen to this original version of Hallelujah from Leonard Cohen's various positions, maybe you'll hear why.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled.
Now remember, this is 1984, and Alan, this original version of the song by Leonard Cohen is full of the sounds of 1984.
It's absolutely right. It's actually, this is the album that sort of began a, you know, second part of his career obsession with synthesizers for the way that Leonard Cohen made records. And you're absolutely right. You can hear the latest electronics of 1984 all over that song.
And his own engineer hated how this turned out.
Well, it was, you know, I wouldn't say hated, but, you know, it was not what she, you know, and this is an engineer who's worked with him through the rest of his career.
Right.
But said, you know, maybe that wasn't exactly the sound that she would have wanted to hear. You know, and this is also 1984, possibly the biggest year in pop music history. I mean, this is the year of Purple Rain, Born in the USA, and Like a Virgin, when MTV is ruling, you know, everything about music. So it's very easy to look back and say, who are these idiots at the record company who heard, you know, heard this song that would become a classic and wouldn't put it out? But, I think they were much more concerned with keeping up with demand for Bruce Springsteen records at the
right.
time than a 50-year-old poet, you know, singing this
with a
sort
full-on chorus and these kind of cheesy synths, and
and so it's, you know, I think that there's some. I think in hindsight, it's easy to be harsher on that decision than what it was in the moment.
The book is called "The Holy or the Broken: Leonard Cohen, Jeff Buckley, and the Unlikely Ascent of Hallelujah." Alan Light is the author. Worst version of Hallelujah.
Well, there's two I've got that I have to return to as worst version. You know, I don't have a problem with Susan Boyle singing this song. It's easy to just dismiss it. But the edit that she does to the lyrics just butchers. I mean, it's actually meaningless. It cuts off in the middle of a verse. It's evident that she just wanted to be able to sing that chorus, and it didn't matter what else was there around that. And so that is kind of horrifying.
Baby, I've been here before. I've seen this room. And I've walked this floor. I used to live alone before I knew you.
And the other one that's just, the biggest swing and a miss was Bono did it for another Leonard tribute record in the mid-90s and did it as kind of a trip-hop version that recited the lyrics and then goes into this falsetto on the chorus. And what's funny about this is I spoke to Bono for the book, and I'd written about all the reasons that this version is such a disaster, and it took a long time to reach him because he's Bono.
Right.
And then finally he gets on the phone, and I'm like, oh my God, he's going to tell me, you know, the big defense of his version. I'm going to have to rewrite this whole section. And he got on the phone, and he said, Alan, I couldn't remember why I said I was going to do this interview, and then I remembered it's because I have to apologize to everybody. And just said, look, I know what I was trying to do. I never should have put that out. It's just, you know, it was an experiment that I just should have left on a shelf. And so, you know, this is the right thing for him to say, and I'm glad he could, you know, show the humor about it,
well,
at least in the mirror.
Now we have to hear it. This is a little bit of Bono's version of Hallelujah.
Your faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof. Her beauty in the moonlight overthrew you. She tied you to a kitchen chair. She broke your throne. She cut your hair. And from your lips she drew the hallelujah.
Is Bono's version of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah.
And you're speechless.
It's radio. It's not TV. But if it were TV, listeners, you would see disbelief on my face.
Now, you know.
I've somehow missed that version.
Yeah, well, you can see how much
you,
your life. Yeah. But, you know, listen, Bono, he said to me, you know, this may be the most perfect song ever written, was his description. And he's brought it on the last U2 tour. They started using it. Doing the first verse as an intro into Where the Streets Have No Name. You know, he certainly made his peace enough with it to be able to go back and has always professed his you know, deep admiration for Leonard Cohen. you can see what he was trying to do with that version.
Yeah. Alan Light's book is called The Holy or the Broken. It tells the story of the amazing trajectory of the song Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen. And with all of the hundreds of versions that are now out there, anything recent that has surprised you in a good way?
There's a we were saying before, where you get so lost in talking about the words to this song and talking about Leonard's writing and the poetry and all that, that sometimes you don't think enough about the melody. And there was an instrumental version that the ukulele virtuoso Jake Shimabukuro recorded last year. That's really, really gorgeous. And, you know, I spoke to him for the book and he's like, this isn't about the words at all to me. This is about the way these chords work and what this melody is. And there's something really, at least for me, after having spent so much time talking about this verse or that verse or this version or whatever, just to hear what is actually behind that song. It sounds just gorgeous. You know, at that moment, I kind of needed an injection of that. So I don't think we're done yet.
All right. Well, and good thing, too, because it has become a standard. It is still a great song. Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah is the subject of Alan Light's book called The Holy or the Broken. Leonard Cohen, Jeff Buckley, and the unlikely ascent of Hallelujah. Alan, great to see you again.
Thanks so much, John.
This is Soundcheck.